Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Spirit of Prophecy podcast. I am excited to have a new guest to the program today for the first time, Pastor Austin Wagner. He's pastor of the Resurrection Baptist Church in Calpins, South Carolina. And we are going to have a conversation today. We are going to get ahead of the annual debate on what day of the week Jesus died on. Every year when this time comes around on social media, everybody starts firing at each other over whether or not he died on a Wednesday or died on Good Friday. And last year, I had listened to a sermon by Pastor Joey Wampler, who's been on the program before, showing his beliefs on the day Jesus died. And it was definitely a direction that I was leaning towards, and I thought it was a great explanation. I believe I texted something to him about it, and then he mentioned that he had gotten a lot of the stuff from Pastor Austin Wagner on it. And then he sent me a link to that message. I went and listened to that message. I was like, man, this is good stuff. It looks like the direction I was leaning, but I had not really taken a strong stand on, is in fact correct. They brought up some arguments that I had not thought of before. A lot of things that I had put together, they had put together. And so this was shortly after Easter, I believe, I had watched these things. And so I made a mental note that next year, when it gets around that time, I'm going to contact these guys and see if they would want to do a program on the subject. And so Pastor Wampler was not able to join us today, but I do have Pastor Austin Wagner. And so, Pastor Wagner, why don't you introduce yourself to everyone and tell us a little bit about you and your ministry.
All righty. Well, it's an honor to be on here. As he said, my name's Austin Wagner, and Pastor Resurrection Baptist Church in the great metropolis of Calpins, South Carolina. About 2,000 people here in our little town. And I was born and raised here in the upstate, and got saved at 8 years old. And then family separated, got out of church and things. When I was about 14, I walked in the doors at Resurrection Church that Pastor Wampler had just planted a couple years before that. And God really began to work on me through that. Got right with the Lord in a lot of different areas of my life. Started going to church by myself when I was 16, 17. Surrendered to preach at 17. And then began to grow in the Lord, serving the ministries of the church, nursing home, jails, filling the pulpit for local pastors, things like that. And then I eventually became Pastor Wampler's associate. And then about almost 3 years ago, this coming May, is when he took the church down there in Louisiana. They voted on me the next week, and we've been going right along ever since then. And so so he's partial to me, which is probably why he perjured himself when he gave me credit for these teachings. He preached a message along these lines many years ago, older than the one that's on YouTube now. The first message he preached along these lines, he said he sounded like a jerk. And so he wanted to preach it again at the new church in a nicer tone. And y'all know he's been on this podcast a couple of times. And so he wants to be kind and tries to be kind. I preferred the earlier version. But anyway, so that's how we got here.
Well, yeah, we're all supposed to be jerks about this issue. That's exactly what happens on social media every year.
Yeah, I'm just glad that someone is finally treating this fundamental of the faith with the seriousness that it deserves. So I appreciate that.
Amen. I hope everybody that had it wrong gets saved after listening to this podcast.
Amen.
And repents of the wrong day. That's a different crucifixion. That's a different Jesus. That's always kind of the go-to.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's another Jesus was on the other day.
Exactly. So, obviously, we do not really care if people disagree on the day that Jesus died. You just better believe that he died, and you better believe, you better be trusting in it to get you to heaven. But it's not wrong for us to nerd out on the scriptures a little bit. No. Look into the details on these things. It forces us to study those passages, which cannot possibly hurt us, and just to think about all that he did. And really, I like the sermon that you preached. I'll leave a link in the description. It was called, I believe, The Week That Changed the World. I went and listened to it again this morning, just kind of refreshing myself on it. And I liked how you just kind of went through the whole week, starting at Palm Sunday, because that one week, that a lot of the Gospels a big portion of the Gospels is centered around that one week. You know, and Jesus, you know, he had a ministry was a lot longer than a week, but that week was obviously just the main, you know, the main thing there. And so that was great. But yeah, I didn't know Pastor Wampler started the church there in South Carolina. And that's pretty neat how, you know, you were got started there and took over. That is pretty neat. And just so everybody knows, I'll do a disclaimer for Pastor Wagner, but you know, him and Pastor Wampler, they do not agree with everything I teach on this program, but these are good guys that I have respect for. I like Pastor Wampler. If I teach something good, he lets me know. If I teach something he doesn't agree with, he'll let me know too. And he'll challenge me. And sometimes in the comments and people get mad at him. And I always tell people, Pastor Wampler's off limits. He has my respect. We've met in person before and had conversations about these things. And I've got a ton of respect for these guys. And this program is not exclusively for people who think exactly like I do. I did just recently have a Safe Space live stream where I got a bunch of people on here who agree with me for the most part. But yeah, that is not what we do all the time on this program. And so, yeah, I am excited to have Pastor Wagner on the program. And so if we can just go ahead and do a little spoiler alert, I guess, you know, and tell everybody from the get-go, you know, what day of the week do you think Jesus died on the cross? Is it Wednesday, Good Wednesday, or Good Friday?
I think it's Good Thursday. I am a Good Thursday advocate. And it's funny how that the vast majority of people just somehow seem to forget that that's one of the days of the week. They go straight from either Wednesday or Friday. But there's a day in between that I think has a lot of scriptural support and a good argument for. So I'm a Thursday guy.
Okay. So now the only thing I don't like about the Thursday position, it sounds like a compromise. It's like, fine, we can't get along on Wednesday and Friday. How about we just meet in the middle on Thursday?
So, yeah. One pastor tell me that he didn't like it because that meant that, you know, or why do we have our midweek service on Wednesdays then? You know, because they say, well, that we have church on Wednesday because Jesus died on Wednesday. And then I had to inform him, well, if Jesus dies on Thursday, then that means the night before would have been their Thursday, our Wednesday night. And Jesus had a prayer meeting there in the upper room. And so Wednesday night services are okay. They're scriptural.
Right. Well, yeah, and that same thing crossed my mind too, because we always have Lord's Supper on Wednesday, and you know that's the night he died, right? Or you know that was what I always thought. And sure. So I remember when I was listening to your guys' message, I was like, well, you know, this still doesn't mess up having Lord's Supper on Wednesday, because you know as Baptists we can't change our midweek service, you know,
right?
But but I was just like, but then that's okay because okay, the Last Supper would have been on Wednesday according to this, so. We're still good. We're still covered. But, you know, here's the dirty little secret that probably nobody wants to admit. And that is that I don't think we have Wednesday night service because Jesus died on Wednesday night. I think it was just, you know, it's kind of a tradition. You know, we wanted to have a Bible study time, doing it in the middle of a week to just kind of recharge your spiritual batteries. You know, doing it in the middle of a week is a good idea rather than doing it close together. I mean, that's probably more where that came from.
Right. But more of a practical matter than anything. Even though when Preacher Womper did start Resurrection Baptist Church, we had midweek service on Thursday.
Oh, really?
So I don't think it had anything to do with his Thursday position. Okay. I'm not even sure he had reached his Thursday position at that point back in, I guess that would have been 2008. And so I'm not sure. But
no, well, you know, a lot of people, and especially church plants, I've known they've had midweek service on Thursday because it enables them to visit other churches on Wednesdays too. And so they can kind of fellowship. Right. And that's nice. Cause that was one thing with me. When we started our church, you know, during those first years, you don't have anybody to take your place, fill in for you or anything like that. And I just really missed getting to, you know, visit other churches occasionally, you know, the fellowship, stuff like that, you know, and then I'm working all the time too. So I couldn't even make a lot of revival meetings and things. And so a lot of people, do that. And, just for that reason. And I mean, again, I don't think it's unbiblical. So, well, all right, well, let's go ahead and get into this subject. So Just to kind of give people the ammo, we've both said that we believe it is on Thursday. So I guess when it comes to presenting it, you know, how would you like to start out just kind of laying it all out? I did like how you did it in your sermon, where you just kind of went through the week. And it looked like, too, you mostly focused on Mark, because Mark does seem to be the most specific. And I think one of the mistakes a lot of people make, as I was looking at this, because if you look at Matthew, in many ways, I can see where people get the wrong idea in certain areas, because there's some statements that are a little vague. And then I think people are coming to certain conclusions, where if you go to Mark, it's not contradicting what you see in Matthew, but it is more specific. And then all of a sudden we can realize things. So how would you like to start out presenting that?
Well, in the message that I preached, I tried to start where everyone's on the same page, where, you know, the Wednesday, Thursday, Friday guys, everybody seems to be in very good agreement about Palm Sunday and about that. And so that's why I tried to start with that and then kind of work through the week. And my primary goal in preaching the message wasn't just to, you know, make the Thursday argument. I was really just trying to encourage people that as we go through Holy Week, this, as you said, the narrative slows down in the Gospels and really emphasizes this week. And so it's obviously something we need to pay attention to. But the goal was so that people could kind of think their way through that week along with Jesus. And so that's why we tried to start on Sunday and work our way through. And so that was the way that I went about it. And we talked about, you know, Palm Sunday is a day of presenting. Jesus is presenting himself as the Messiah as he rides into Jerusalem. They say, Hosanna, blessed is he that cometh in the name of the Lord. We know that is a quotation of a messianic psalm. And so that's acknowledging Jesus to be who he is, the Messiah. And that's why the Pharisees and the crowd didn't like it, because they knew what that meant for him to be the son of David. But nevertheless, that's what Jesus does.
Right. Yeah. You know, I got an idea. I don't know if I'm going to be able to do anything about it this year, just because we're about to take a couple trips. I'm going to try, but I just started thinking about this morning. But, you know, obviously, you know, we can't have we're not going to be having a revival meeting the week before Easter and all that. We haven't planned any of that. But I thought about doing some videos each day, starting at Palm Sunday till Easter, and just taking the time to each day look at what Jesus did on those days, because there's stuff we see on Sunday, there's stuff we see on really each day of that week. And I think it just, you know, one thing I've done just myself in the past, usually starting on Wednesday, is I've all, you know, and that was too kind of with the idea of the Wednesday being the crucifixion in mind, but I've always liked to think a lot about what was going on in those days, you know, in between the crucifixion and Easter. You know, obviously, you know, when it comes to, you know, the 3 days that Jesus was dead, you know, the Bible doesn't give us a lot of detail, but just, you know, imagining and what was going on in the minds of the disciples and all that. I don't know. It's just, it is a special week where I think it's good to think about all those things. And I'm hoping to do something like that, if I have time to put everything together. Just make a video showing each day the things that Jesus dealt with, the things that he did, and just to just try to think about Jesus that whole week, because you know, everything was significant, you know, that the Bible records there. And so, yeah, Palm Sunday, that's the big one everyone agrees on. So then I guess where would you say the Monday events are?
Well, so ending up on that Sunday, the reason I go to Mark is because there's a clear transition of days that's recorded in Mark 11. And so that's why I think I kind of ran that narrative through to let people see the clear changing of day to day to day, because it becomes important later on. And so Jesus, after he's presented, he rides into town. He goes to the temple and he views the temple, looks around, sees the disrepair, spiritually speaking, of the temple. And then afterward, the Bible says there in Mark 11:11, and now the eventide was come, he went out unto Bethany with the 12. And so I just try to show the eventide comes, and so we're entering that next day. Obviously, the Jewish reckoning of a day is evening in the morning, and so he goes back to Bethany. And that was something I thought was interesting throughout this study. I guess I had never thought about, well, where's Jesus spending the night, you know, during this week? And it seems you see him coming and going from Bethany. And so that would be the next place I would go, showing them him going to Bethany. And then it says in the next verse, in verse 11, and on the morrow, when they were come from Bethany, he was hungry. Then he curses the fig tree. And that plays a part as well with marking another day later on. But anyway, so he goes to Bethany. And then as he returns back to Jerusalem on Monday, he curses that fig tree. And that's when he goes in to purge the temple.
Yeah. Yeah. And one thing I wanted to point out too, in Matthew 21, in verse 10, it says, when he was come to Jerusalem, all the city was moved, saying, who is this? Multitude said, this is Jesus, the prophet, Nazareth of Galilee. That's Palm Sunday. And then it says, and Jesus went to the temple of God and cast out all them that sold and bought in the temple, overthrew the tables. And that's what he said, my house should be called a house of prayer. You made it a den of thieves. And so when you read just Matthew, it's real easy to get the idea that those things happen right after each other.
Right.
He rides in on Palm Sunday, goes and cleanses the temple. But yeah, Mark actually gives the additional details. And so the cleansing of, so I guess the way I like to break it down is you have the triumphal entry on the donkey on Sunday. The cleansing of the temple is on Monday. And it is when that takes place. But also before the cleansing of the temple is when he curses the fig tree, which is another thing everybody's familiar with. So yeah, so you would agree. So yeah, Sunday.
Yep, so that's what he does.
Yep, the entry. Yep. And then then Monday, curses the fig tree, cleanses the temple. That's where we're at, right?
Yep. And there in Mark, he cleanses the temple. And then right after that, in verse 19, it says, and when even was come, he went out of the city. And so that's what I called Monday a day of purging or purifying. He comes in, he purifies the temple. And the reason is because what he's going to do on the next day, he's you know, getting everything ready for him to come in and preach on the next day, on Tuesday. That's what he does. But he returns back to Bethany after that. And we see that again because in Mark 11, verse 20, it says, and in the morning, as they passed by, they saw the fig tree dried up from the roots. And so Jesus seems to be going back to the same place every night in Bethany and then returning by the same path back to Jerusalem.
Right, right. And so when you're reading, going through Mark, from Mark 11:20 all the way through chapter 13, all of that would be on Tuesday. So as well, so like the Olivet Discourse, that's a Tuesday thing as well, which is so something to just kind of keep in mind. And yeah, you don't really, you really can't tell that from the other gospels as clearly, but Mark does. Mark just goes into a little more detail on the timeline of these things, which I think
and
is
interesting. And it's very concise, which is helpful, which that's Mark's way. You know, it's the gospel in a nutshell, you know, so it's straightway to this, immediately to that. It's a really linear telling of the story, which I think is very helpful to everybody.
Right. So then chapter 14. Now, this is a spot here where I think it can get a little confusing. But so, so for Tuesday, or not Tuesday, Tuesday was preaching day. So Wednesday, what took place on Wednesday?
Okay, well, you want to talk about that Mark 14?
Yeah, the Mark 14 1.
Right. Yeah, so in Mark 14, it says, after 2 days was the feast of the Passover and of unleavened bread, and the chief priests and the scribes sought how they might take him by craft and put him to death, but they said, not on the feast day, lest there be an uproar of the people. And so that is something to talk about for sure. They're saying, like, well, we don't want to do this on the Passover, but they're acknowledging that it's 2 days away. And so 2 days from now is the Passover, and, you know, we don't want him to die on the Passover. But later on in that day of preaching, something that is worthy of note is Jesus preaches to the Pharisees, the Sadducees, the Herodians, all this crowd comes to Jesus. Then in Matthew chapter 26, at the end of that day, the same day that we're talking about in Mark 14, 1, in verse 1 of Matthew 26, it says, "And it came to pass when Jesus had finished all these sayings, he said unto his disciples, Ye know that after 2 days is the feast of Passover." It's the same thing they said in Mark 14, 1 and 2. And Jesus says, "You know that after 2 days is the feast of Passover, and the Son of Man is betrayed to be crucified." And so you have the chief priests saying, "Well, you know, we really don't want to kill him on the Passover, and that's 2 days away." And Jesus says, basically, "You don't get the choice. I am going, because he has to fulfill that feast of Passover."
Right.
And so they're saying that they would rather not do it on that day, but Jesus says, on the same day, 2 days from now, is the feast of Passover. The Son of Man is going to be crucified on that day.
And so they're saying that on Tuesday.
Correct.
Right.
Yes, sir. Yeah. It's that same timeline.
Right. And so that would make sense too, because if Jesus dies on Passover, and then it would make sense that on that evening, you know, the Wednesday evening, that would technically be the beginning of the Passover. And so that's when they're, you know, having that Last Supper. And so, yeah, so I mean, and that was the part where I had gotten a little confused before, was on Mark 14. In my brain, I think I already had myself on Wednesday. And so I'm thinking after 2 days, it's Friday. But the Matthew 26, that's where it kind of clears that up. And you realize, no, wait, when this is being said, we're still on Tuesday.
Right.
And so sometimes in stories, you follow kind of a timeline in the Bible, but then it might tell you about something else that was taking place. And so you kind of back up chronologically a little bit. I think that was where I got messed up. And to me, while I was pretty sure it was Thursday, that was just kind of the one thing. I'm like, where am I going wrong on this? I know there's probably a way to explain it, but how do I explain it? And I do. I think the Matthew 26 makes it crystal clear, you know, how to take that passage right there.
Yeah, and we talked about it a little bit before recording, but that's an instance when you use the clearer verses to interpret the ones that are more vague, because it is complicated at times, and so trying to piece all these puzzle pieces together. But I think to me that makes it clear. Jesus says on Tuesday, after he spent all day preaching, that 2 days from now is the feast of Passover, and I'm going to be crucified on that day.
So. Right. Well, and what's interesting about all of this too, and something that people need to remember is, yeah, when you look at what we're reading in Matthew versus what we're reading in Mark, it's like, well, you can come to two different conclusions. Well, yeah, you can come to two different conclusions if you are reading the passage looking for something very specific that the passage is not trying to explain.
Right.
And people do that a lot, where we've got a doctrine or we've got something we're wanting to prove from the scriptures, and so we go looking for the proof rather than letting the passage tell us what it's wanting to tell us. And in both of these passages, you know, it's telling us certain details, it's focusing on certain aspects of what Jesus did. But we want to know the timeline of all of it. And so some of these passages, they might be a little vague. And so if we want to find that, you have to find that clearer place. And what we end up seeing too, is that these things, they're not contradictions. You know, they harmonize together. And it's just a lot. Sometimes Mark, he contradicts the thoughts you were thinking when you were reading Matthew, looking for something the passage was not trying to explain.
Right.
And so, again, if people are just honest with how they're looking at the Bible, they would have to come to that conclusion. And that's what I think is just kind of interesting about all these things that you're showing and that you talked about in your message is, yeah, you're clearly looking for a narrative, you know, and trying to find these things.
Right.
But
yeah. It's a confirmation bias, you know.
Yes.
And we're all guilty of that in, you know, different areas. So it's good to slow down and try to remove the presuppositions and let the text say what it's saying. But also, whatever the answer is, it has to fit with all of the verses.
Right.
Because there's no contradiction. And so
Yes. And so a passage that contradicts your position on another passage is not necessarily a contradiction in the Bible.
Right.
And so what you have to do is you've got to figure out, okay, well, what conclusion causes all of the Bible to agree with itself? Sure. And I do. I think this Thursday idea is definitely the best. And so Wednesday, are there any other events specifically besides like the Last Supper that you would say were Wednesday events?
Well, Wednesday, you know, in the message again, I referred to it as a day of preparing, because you have Jesus, he's back in Bethany. You find him all of a sudden back in Bethany, which to me is letting you know that, you know, a day has transpired. And then he's there in the house of Simon the leper, and you can read about that in Matthew 26 is where I have it, you know, in my notes to look at. You have the story of the alabaster box that takes place that's preparing Jesus for what he's about to go through. And then you have Judas Iscariot, who is preparing to betray Jesus. That's when he goes and covenants with them for 30 pieces of silver about what he's going to do. And then that's when Jesus, you know, sends them to prepare the Lord's Passover that they're going to keep according to Exodus 12, that has to be, you know, killed at the even and consumed before midnight. And so that'd be our Wednesday. But, you know, so preparing for the Passover on that next day.
Right. Yeah. And boy, that's another subject that, and you bring up, brought up some things in the message too, that I never really thought about that I know we'll get into, but the amount of stuff that is in the Passover, that if you really take the time to look at that and just how much you can see Jesus all over it. And it really is interesting the way, you know, how you have the people that didn't want him being taken on the Passover. And there's a lot of examples of things like that, where it's like, it was kind of against the will of the leadership, you know, against Pilate and a lot of these things to do things a certain way. Yet it was very clear, you know, Jesus was adamant it was going to be a certain way because he was so in sync with the law of God, you know, and right. he was going to fulfill everything that was written in the law and prophets. And so a lot of those details, you know, most of us, we wouldn't think anything of it. We would overlook it. We would not even really care. But boy, Jesus cared very much about all of that. And
that's why 1 Corinthians 5 calls him Christ our Passover.
Right.
And to the very minute details of what Jesus is doing, he being the lawgiver, he has that in mind, and he's keeping every aspect of that, even to where that if you go read Exodus 12, that Passover lamb was selected on the 10th of Abib. Mm-hmm. It was examined. It was it was killed on the 14th of Abib, which would have been Passover. And so given the timeline that I'm advocating for, Thursday would have been the 14th, the Passover, where Jesus observes the Passover and then becomes the Passover on the same day. 4 days before that would have been Sunday, the triumphal entry, and that's when the lamb would have been selected. And so even to that detail, and then you have the Herodians and the Pharisees and the Sadducees trying to come and examine Jesus and find fault with him, as they would have done with the lamb.
Yes.
Then you have Pilate, who stands and says that I find no fault in this man, you know, a pronouncement that the Passover lamb is pure. And so all these things, I think, are important to kind of help flesh out, you know, the picture. And so while it's not a fundamental, you know, I do think there are, you know, that God cares about pictures. That's a quote my pastor always says. God likes pictures.
And absolutely.
He wants to keep those pictures. And so he cares that they're, you know, they're done right. And so that's the way I see it.
You know, and sometimes as preachers, we're guilty of making pictures where God didn't make pictures. Right. But when when it comes to all these things, I mean, the New Testament tells us that's what they were. You know, the book of Hebrews tells us that's what they were. And then, you know, and even if they didn't, it's so obvious at the same time. Right. It's like there's other things in the Bible too, that, you know, preachers often preach as pictures and types and things that we don't have any place in the scriptures where it explicitly says that's what it is, but it's like, that's pretty hard to deny.
Yeah. Like, well, these ones, I that's why I like preaching the types that the New Testament tells us are types.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that rock in the wilderness, it's Christ, you know, 1 Corinthians tells us it is. the manna. Jesus says in John 6, I'm the manna. That's me. It's a picture of me. And so I have heard some types that I think that it was a surprise to God that it was in the Bible, you know, when somebody get up to preach it. But I like these. These are a blessing. So
yes. Well, and it's stuff like this too that, you know, you've got to wonder how Jewish people today who know the Old Testament very well, you know, how they can look at these stories and it's like, okay, even if you thought Jesus was a fraud, I mean, the way he made these things happen, you know, you can't do that. You know, no man can just, you know, conform all these people to his will in that way, you know, to make yourself get executed, you know, in the way that he did, you know, according to the law in such a big way. It's just, it's a fascinating thing. And it's hard to believe that any Jews who've ever heard of Jesus have not just accepted him as the Messiah. It's so clear.
Yeah. And that's the way that I choose to look at these kind of subjects. You know, this could seem really kind of academic and boring and, you know, pencil pushing material. But to me, I like to look at it in that other perspective. It's like, wow, look how beautiful this is, that God's putting this whole thing together and we can look back on it and see that he is God and he's exactly who he said he was. He's our Passover lamb that taketh away sin of the world. So,
yeah, well, one of my favorite Psalms, and this is something I like to think about, and I don't know if we have this on video. Years ago, under my inspiration, my wife wrote a monologue that my son did at a Christian school fine arts competition. And it was taken from like a perspective of a scribe, a Jewish scribe in that day who was at the cross when Jesus is dying. And what kind of gave me the idea for it, because I'm not a writer. My wife, she can write really good. But Psalms 22, when he says, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? You know, I'm just picturing a Jew who should know that psalm, you know, hearing him say that, recognizing those words. You know, look how often we say lines and it triggers songs in our mind, you know, and it should have done that. And when you look at, you know, the specifics of that, you know, he literally says, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? Which is not something people say all the time, but it's something that was in one of their psalms. And, you know, that should have triggered this psalm in the mind of any scribe. And then as he says, all they that see me laugh me to scorn, they shoot out the lip, they shake the head saying he trusted on the Lord that he would deliver him. Let him deliver him. See, he delight him. A scribe would have heard people saying that there. Yeah. As he's saying those words, he's hearing those words by the people that are there. You know, the bulls of Bashan compass me, strong bulls of Bashan beset me about. They gaped upon me with their mouths as a raven and roaring lion. I am poured out like water. All my bones are out of joint. My heart is like wax melted in the strength of my bowels. I mean, and then to see the blood and water flow out of them after they put a spear through them, you know, they part my garments among them and cast lots upon my vesture. That's so specific.
Right.
That is so specific. Yeah. And it's just like, how on earth could you have known that psalm and been there in the presence of all that and not been like, truly, this was the Son of God.
Yeah, that's camp meeting material, brother. We're going to bring you down south.
Oh, yeah.
Preaching the camp meeting, brother.
I'll do it. I could preach it that way in a way that would be effective. I don't do it that much. I pastor a bunch of Yankees, and you know the glory spout never gets opened up in the up this far north of the Mason-Dixon line.
Sure.
But anyway, where were we? So we were talking about the signs, the preparation on Wednesday.
Yeah, talking about Wednesday. Yeah, and Wednesday, you know, ends, well, so on our calendar anyway, they go, they observe the Passover. Then you have, you know, the Garden of Gethsemane that eventually happens. Jesus tells them in one moment, to sleep, and then he tells them to, you know, to take rest there in Matthew 26:45. And then he says, behold, the hour is at hand. The Son of Man is betrayed in the hands of sinners. And so that is on Thursday, according to a Jewish reckoning of a day. But you have that night that transpires, and that next morning, which you have Thursday morning, is where you have the betrayal that takes place. And so I call Thursday a day of payment, because that's what I believe. I believe Jesus died for our sins on Thursday. And so that's where we were.
Yeah. And so I think everybody's aware of what took place, you know, on Thursday with the crucifixion. And so then he dies. They want to take him down off the cross before sunset because of the Sabbath. And that's where the Good Friday comes from, because it says they wanted to take him down for the preparation for the Sabbath, for that Sabbath was a high day. And in reality, it seems like on both sides, on the Wednesday and the Thursday side, we've got our magical proof text where it cancels out everything else in the Bible. And so for the Catholics, we got, oh, there it is. That proves, you know, Sabbath begins Friday night. Therefore, you know, he died on a Friday.
Yeah.
Over, you know, but then you have, as Jonah was 3 days and three nights in the whale's belly. You know, you can't get 3 days and three nights from Friday. Therefore, it was Wednesday. Magic verse. So, yeah,
we have a magic verse too in Luke 24. We'll get there in a little bit, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
But now's as guess as good a time as any to bring that both of those verses have to fit again.
Right.
You know, there's no contradiction. And so the next day has to be a Sabbath, a high day. And just so happens that the 15th of Abib is always a high day. It's the first day of unleavened bread. So you have the Passover, and you can, if anybody's looking, you can look in Leviticus 23. It outlines these feasts in a very readable, linear way that's helpful. And so you have the Passover, and then you have the first day of unleavened bread. And then the following Sunday after Passover is always the Feast of First Fruits. And so it would have been a high day the next day, even if it's on Thursday. So that would be my response to the Friday guys. But you mentioned, I guess it's like it's Matthew 12:40, where it talks about the promise of Jonas, 3 days and three nights, and that has to fit as well. And I think it does. I think it does with a Thursday. And I'm not sure if you're doing that now or later.
Yeah, well, I think we can get into that too, because I like how you explain it, and you gave several examples. I don't have any of them in front of me. I don't know if you have them ready, but in your sermon, you gave a bunch of examples. But this happens a lot, where we often will take words, phrases, timelines, and things in the Bible, and we will give what I always call, and I say this in kind of an insulting way too, but to get a point across to people, it's like, you know, we're always applying this modern American 21st century, you know, way of accounting for things. And it's like, well, that's not how they put things in the Bible. You know, people in other countries and other times, you know, they word things different, you know. For example, I've got some friends from Ireland, and I always get confused when they say the time, and it's like half three. You know, what does that mean? Which I think it's 3:30 is what that means, you know, where we would say half past three. They just say half three. Yeah. Well, half three, that's one and a half.
It's 1:30.
Yeah. So the phrase after 3 days.
Right.
So it's like in our brains, it's like, okay, you know, today's Wednesday. So, which it's not right now, but you know, so that means Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And so after 3 days, what's is that? Well, that's Sunday. Well, that would actually be 4 days.
Sure. You know, right. How that works. And if that's the case, then Sunday would be the fourth day. And so, and this goes back to, I guess, our confirmation bias. Where you have verses like, I have an example here, Luke 18:33. It says, and they shall scourge him and put him to death, and the third day he shall rise again. Mm-hmm. So the Bible says Jesus is going to rise the third day. Mm-hmm. And then there's other verses like Mark 8:31, where it says he began to teach then, the Son of Man must suffer many things, be rejected of the elders and the chief priests and scribes, and be killed, and after 3 days rise again. So after three is four. And so there's this apparent contradiction between, is it the third day or is it after 3 days? Mm-hmm. And the examples that I mentioned in the text are letting the Bible define these terms, these phrases. There's two that I think clearly do this. One, if folks were taking notes or want to look this up, Esther chapter 4 verse 16 is where she sends to tell Mordecai and them to fast for 3 days and three nights, night and day. And then she'll go in before the king. Well, then the next chapter, chapter 5, verse 1, it says, and on the third day, she goes in there before the king. And so, and then the clearest example of that, I think, is with Rehoboam, 2 Chronicles chapter 10. So they come to Rehoboam and they say, hey, make our burden lighter. Jeroboam's with them. And he says, come to me again after 3 days. And then the Bible says, that's verse 5. Verse 12, it says, and they came to him on the third day, as he had said, come again to me on the third day. So in the same passage, it says that he said after 3 days. And then later on, it quotes him again as having said on the third day. And so we have some biblical examples that show that after 3 days and on the third day mean the same thing. And so that 2 Chronicles 10, I think, is the clearest way to look at it, verse 5 and verse 12. So anyway, so that, I think, helps clear up the fact that when the Bible says that he's going to raise from the dead on the third day and he's going to raise from the dead after 3 days, they mean the same thing.
Yeah, yeah, because it's like it is, the way we talk today, you know, if I said, hey, you've got 3 days to give me $100 you owe me, or I'm sending my boys after you, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, what you would think today in America, it's like, so as the recording of this, we're recording on Thursday. I was like, all right, so that means Friday. You know, we think in terms of like 24 hours, but right. In reality, today is a day, and today is a day you should be getting something done and doing something about it. And so today being Thursday, that's a day, Friday, Saturday. So Saturday is your third day. That's
right.
Technically.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the Friday really guys argument. That's the Friday guys. And then you have the other Wednesday guys who say, after 3 days has to mean a full 72 hours.
Right.
And that's just not how we reckon days. You know, Pastor Wampler, in his message, he gives the illustration of his birthday. He said, I was born at 9 o'clock at night. When I wake up on my birthday, my wife always says, happy birthday that morning, you know, because it's that day, you know, so we're not that specific in the way that we even count days. If it touches that day, you know, counts, I guess.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So then, Thursday he dies, you know, so Friday, Saturday, so he would have been dead for part of, and in the grave for part of Thursday.
Right.
So
yeah. Sweet.
And then all of Thursday night, Friday morning, Friday night, Saturday morning, Saturday night, rises early Sunday. I mean, it fits perfectly.
Right. Yeah. It touches 3 days, the Thursday, because we know Jesus dies, you know, at say 3. So Jesus is on the cross from the third hour, which is 9 a.m. for until 3 p.m. So for 6 hours. And remember, they come to Jesus and they don't have to break his legs because he's already passed. And so, and there are some people who would say, well, you know, his body, when Joseph of Arimathea and Nicodemus come, you know, it says that it's about even when they bury his body. And so they say, well, then that doesn't, you know, that's when the clock starts for the 3 days and the three nights. But I would say, I would argue that the 3 days and three nights starts when Jesus dies.
Absolutely.
Because the prophecy is about when, the promise is about as the, you know, as Jonas was in the whale's belly, so the Son of Man be in the heart of the earth for 3 days and three nights.
Right.
And so that happens when he dies. His body never goes to the heart of the earth, you know?
Right.
His body goes in a tomb. And so well, it would have, so that Thursday would have counted if Jesus dies at 3 o'clock on Thursday. Mm-hmm. That's day one.
Then yes.
Friday, the light time, that's day two. Saturday, the light time, that's day three. And Jesus is risen from the dead on Sunday morning before the sun rises. And
right.
So I think you can get 3 days and three nights from that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because he has. He's only got to be 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth. He's there as soon as he dies. And the significance of getting the body in the tomb, I personally believe, the symbol there we see in the Passover is they were supposed to eat all of it. And then anything that was left, there was to be nothing left over and they would burn it. People often use that to prove the suffering in hell, which we're not going to get into. I don't think that's proof of it. I think because the Bible is clear to point out that they wanted to get him in the tomb before the sunset because his body was the sacrifice for sins, you know, they weren't going to go roast it because obviously it needs to rise again, but at the same time, it can't be just left out. Right. That would have messed with the sign of the Passover. So the roasting or the burning of the Passover lamb, I believe that was just symbolic of nothing being left over, because it was seen as such a holy thing. You can't just leave it out there. And it was the right. same thing with Jesus' body on the cross. It could not just be left out. It was a sacrifice for sin. And so it was placed in a tomb, you know, before the sun went down. And that's what I believe the significance of that was and why it's mentioned.
Yes, sir. Yeah, no, I agree with that. But I don't even really focus as much in the message or even in this argument about the body, mm-hmm. because to me, that's not what Matthew 12:40 is about. And mm-hmm. so I don't think it holds a lot of weight in the conversation, you know, about right. this. So,
yeah. Now, is there anything specific? I'm just kind of thinking off the top of my head right now, but like on the Friday, like, do we have any significant stories that take place on the Friday or the Saturday while Jesus was in the tomb? It doesn't appear much. The Bible doesn't really record much of what went on during that time.
No, sir. No, sir. For the apostles or for Jesus, you know, and I know that that's an interesting study, is what takes place between the death of Christ and the resurrection of Christ. I think my pastor's preached a message along those lines before, but you're not going to reference the Gospels a lot in that message, because it's not something that's covered. So I put in the message where I went through the week, I put those 2 days together, Friday and Saturday, and I just called them, you know, days of patience. That's taking place. You have the unleavened, we know because of Leviticus 23, you have the Feast of Unleavened Bread that's taking place. And that leaven is a type of sin. And so there's a great picture in that of Jesus, you know, there's no leaven there. It's being taken away. And so that is as far as my commentary goes on those days.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it makes sense now. And this was something that you guys brought up in your message that I had not thought of too, that I thought was very interesting. And I think what this represents couldn't be more clear, but it would make sense that not much even happened with the disciples during that time, because again, that Feast of Unleavened Bread, that was a special Sabbath, because people have this idea that Sabbath is just Saturday, but no, there were other Sabbaths that they had. And in John, it even references something special about that Sabbath. So, you know, if it's not just referring to a Saturday, you know, it makes sense. If there is such a thing as another Sabbath, which you can find those in the law, you know, it makes sense that it's specified as a special one. And it was because of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, but nothing much would have been going on during that time that Jesus was in the grave. And you guys talk about that a lot. You want to share just kind of the significance of that? Because I think that's very interesting.
Sure.
Really nothing took place in between the death during the time that Jesus was dead.
Yeah. And I think it has to do with why Jesus dies. Jesus dies to take away our sin. And so, and I'm not saying that anybody that preaches a Wednesday is adding works to salvation, but I do think that the picture is clear. As you said, you have Thursday, which is Passover. It's and you know, once a year Sabbath, if you will, a holy day that no work's being done, or no servile work. And then you have the Feast of Unleavened Bread. The first day and the last day of Unleavened Bread were always high days or Sabbath days. And so if Jesus dies on Thursday, you have Thursday Passover, no work's being done. Friday is the first day of Unleavened Bread, no work is being done. You have Saturday, which is always a Sabbath. And then you have Sunday, which the Sunday following Passover, according to Leviticus 23, is always the Feast of First Fruits. And so no work being done. And so the entire time when Jesus is taking care of our sin, if you will, he doesn't allow any work to be done. And so I think that's a great picture of salvation. It's always been by grace through faith, no works being added. And so, but if Jesus dies on Wednesday, then you have Wednesday Passover, Thursday, first day of Unleavened Bread, and then Friday, it's back to work, everybody. You know? And so I think, to me, that messes with the picture, and God cares about his pictures. And so,
absolutely. And it is, it's perfect. You know, while, you know, the gospel is the death, burial, and resurrection. And during that time that he is, you know, in the heart of the earth, his body is in the grave, no work is being done. And when it comes to people getting saved, you know, that's how you get saved. You believe on that. You're not doing any work. And so, I thought I never really thought about the fact that all of those that entire time, you know, that, you know, was a time of no work. And that makes perfect sense, you know?
Sure.
And yeah, and that, it doesn't work right necessarily if it's on Wednesday, does it?
No, sir. No. And now if it's Friday, then it would. But
yeah,
again, I think you can't get 3 days and three nights out of Friday.
Right.
And so, you know, the best arguments for Wednesday disprove Friday, the best arguments for Friday disprove Wednesday, Thursday, is, you know, seems to answer all those questions.
Yeah. And you do, you have Mark that does give a very clear outline. I think that just clears things up. And I think a lot of times, you know, it's kind of my habit if I'm looking at, so, you know, going through something in the Bible, I always go to Matthew first. But, you know, for this subject, Mark is really the best one you want to go to. It definitely has the most specifics on that. So, do you have any other things to add to that? Or is that kind of the gist of it? I think that's probably about as much as I know.
That's the gist of it as far as the fact that when you count the days, it makes sense after 3 days and on the third day. I guess probably I'll end with our strongest verse, that I think, deals with this.
Oh yeah.
And it's in Luke 24. In Luke 24, I'll just mention it where, Jesus is on the road to Emmaus with those two disciples and they're sad. Jesus says, "Why are y'all sad?" And they say, "Are you a stranger? Don't you know?" They talk about Jesus and how he's been crucified. And then they make the statement that today is the third day since these things came to pass. And so to me, that is our, you mentioned the other days have their go-to verses. If I had just one verse to talk about, maybe I should have led with it, not closed with it, but that would be the one where I go to. If Jesus dies on Wednesday, you cannot make, if you count Wednesday or if you don't count Wednesday, you can't make, you know, Sunday, the third day from Wednesday. Actually I was talking with my son, I've got twin boys that are 8. And I was talking with them. I said, I'm going to go on this, you know, podcast. And by the way, I have officially peaked today, my ministry, it's all downhill from here. So on the Spirit of Prophecy podcast, I've peaked already. But I was talking with them about what we were going to be talking about. And my son's 8 years old. I'm not trying to denigrate anybody, but my son's 8 years old. And he says, well, Dad, if Sunday is the third day, then Jesus dies on Thursday. And I said, well, yes, son, that is true. but they make the statement there. And that'd be my go-to verse if I had one verse.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, I'm definitely convinced. I said I was almost there before I listened, but it did, you know, some of the stuff you guys mentioned there, I was like, it just kind of gave me the confirmation. And I really just had to, in my mind, reconcile that one verse as far as how to apply it in Mark 14. And one thing I try very hard to do on this program when it comes to, and this has helped me from listening to other people's perspectives on things, it's just like, I'm always asking, how am I coming to my conclusions? And, you know, there are passages where we do, sometimes we go looking for what we've already decided is there. And so we read it a certain way and then we use it as a proof text for something. It's like, well, no, that verse could be applied a lot of different ways. So we have to see if there's something in the Bible somewhere that makes it, you know, that clarifies that. And I feel like the verses that people are, that are causing them to go wrong, it is those vague verses and those become their proof text. And it's like, no, hang on a second. You know, this one verse here that you're insisting is interpreted this way, you need to prove why it's okay for you to interpret that way. And I feel like when it comes to Mark 14, I think it was Matthew 26 that you referred to, proves how you interpret Mark 14. And then that was like the final thing I just needed settled in my mind. And so I really enjoyed the message. And again, folks watching this, I only gave the disclaimer about Pastor Wagner for his sake. I don't want any of the weirdos that follow me to like go to his church and think he's just like me or something like that on certain things and cause problems. And man, that would make that kind of thing aggravates me, because as much as I love you know, what I believe and what we teach and stuff in this program. I tell people all the time, there are so many people and there are so many wonderful churches out there who don't agree with me on everything. And it's just like, and if you can't get along there, you know, and I've told people on my side this before that just have problems with, you know, pre-tribulation. I'm sorry. I refuse to live in a world where I can't like people like this, fellowship with people like this. They're good folks. They're good preachers. They love the Lord. And maybe they're even right in some of these things where we're wrong. You know, so it's like,
well, I've been right one time. So we've been able to persuade you one time on this. We've got our foot in the door. Mm-hmm. So we're glad that you came out of the closet as a Thursday guy. And I am a regular listener to the Spirit of Prophecy, and I would recommend it, even though I get trashed on there sometimes. I enjoy it because I know you're coming from it. You're coming to that from a good perspective, a Bible believer. And, you know, so I can handle it. So
And it's said it's never personal because right. I think I've proven I get along with, you know, the pre-trib dispensational world and all that. And there are certain characters in that world that I think are terrible, but
right.
A lot of you guys would probably feel the same way too.
Yes, no, absolutely. Yeah. Well, I would hate to be, painted with the broadest brush of everyone that claims those titles. As I'm sure you would, there's some folks probably that would agree more with you that you would rather not be identified with or tied to.
So. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I've talked to people before too, where, you know, we'll be talking about a certain preacher and then one I really like, and people will ask, they'll ask me like, well, you know, what's his position? I was like, I don't know. And I don't want to find out because I like him. I don't want anything to change my mind. And so I'm never going to ask.
Yeah. There you go. And,
I was just last night in church. I was referencing, and I don't know this man personally. I briefly met him one time years ago. I've heard him preach in person multiple times, but I don't know if do you ever listen to Pastor Joe Arthur? I love Pastor Joe Arthur.
Yes, sir. Preaching. Yeah.
I love listening to him preach. And I'm always encouraged. I always truly enjoy it. And his style is 100% different than mine.
Yes, it is.
But I probably could preach like that if I wanted to. If I was in a Southern church where I had the right kind of audience, I think I could do it. But, but you know, what I love about his preaching is, while it's the most of the sermons I've heard, it's been like at camp meetings and conferences, and it's just kind of like an fire you up, encouraging. There's always like some deep nugget of truth or something that just gets you thinking. You know, right. I don't know if I've ever heard him preach a sermon where he didn't say something in there that like, I'm like thinking about it for like the next days afterwards and just kind of pondering on it and stuff like that. And I absolutely love that. And I hate how political everybody is in the IFB. He gets creamed all the time because
he gets hit on both sides.
And I will. And anytime I've ever seen him getting attacked on social media, I'm always defending him because, you know, I'm glad to me, I don't care who he preaches for, as long as they're not changing him. And I've not seen that, you know, he still preaches like, you know, I heard him like 15 years ago or something like that. So, I don't have a problem with that, but on our side too, we're the same way. And it's like, well, what's this? It's like, I don't want to know. It's like, you know, and I'm for him either way. And somebody's going to go find a clip of him saying something. It's like, you know, I
Christ is preached. Paul said, I'm glad as Christ is preached. So
yeah, exactly.
I'm happy with that.
And you know, I don't know how he would do. He probably would do great up here in Illinois. It's Joe Arthur, but, he's in Georgia, right?
Yeah, he pastors in Atlanta, I believe.
That's right.
Around Atlanta. So, yeah, but all of his meetings are in the South. He was right down the road from us just a little while, I guess last week. And so he's encouraging for sure.
He's preached a couple times up here in Illinois at a meeting I've gone to. And
He's close with Brother Brian McBride, who he's up there in Indiana. I think he's from Bean Blossom, Indiana. And so we've got
Okay.
some Yankees that come down south and preach to us. And they're a novelty. Folks drive from miles around to check them out.
Yeah. But yeah, no. Yeah, he's one of the good ones. But I guess yeah, I just say all that to just one of the goals of this program is it to just not be political and to encourage Baptists not be political. I think every Baptist ought to stand by their convictions. And if some guy, you know, he's got some teaching that you can't fellowship, then don't fellowship with them. But at the same time, you know, if this is somebody you know is a good guy that loves the Lord and it's some minor difference and you're going to let politics stop you, I just think that's lame and kind of pathetic personally. And so, you know, we try to set an example on this program. And because it's like there are, you know, while there is a variety of Baptists, I think a lot of us should be able to just like get along pretty good and like each other and stuff. And so, yeah, there's some I don't like, but it's,
There are
but.
some that agree with me, 100% on most of these doctrinal issues that I don't like. So
Yeah.
it happens. Personalities, people, it is what it is. But I appreciate, the opportunity to come on. And like I said, I'm a listener, and I have officially peaked. So I've reached the pinnacle of my career, if you will,
Well, I mean,
being with you.
hopefully, I don't know how political the crowd is that you run with, though, but hopefully it doesn't get you canceled. But I never everybody's gonna accuse you of being a post-tribber or something like that.
That's fine. I don't mind a little controversy, and so it is what it is. I don't think that'll happen though. Lord's give us some good friends in the ministry, and so I'm glad to be able to come on here and make another one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you're a product of Brother Wampler's ministry, he doesn't give a rip about that stuff. That's and that's why I like him. I like guys that just don't give a rip. And it's like what camp's he in? I have no idea. Those are the ones I like, you know.
Yes, sir.
So, hey, man. Well, all right. Well, hey, I hope you all enjoyed this. And so, here in the next week or so, as people start fighting with each other over between Wednesday and Friday. We've helped you hopefully get have an opinion, and you can be the contrarian and jump in, and you can look at it as a way we can all compromise and meet in the middle at Thursday, or just one more area we can divide. So, but anyway, well, thank you all for watching. God bless you, and we will see y'all next time.